Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Many of you remember little Dylan Walborn from Broomfield, Colorado, not far from our studio, who was a victim of America's mercy-killing euthanasia movement, judged better off dead by Denver's Children's Hospital and a social worker from the city of Denver, and Dylan's public school teachers, and the Denver Post. All of these conspired together in agreement, led really by the affirmation by Denver's Children's Hospital to Dylan's parents that little four-year-old Dylan should be starved to death, and he was. He was killed over a period of 24 days. Now, there's a doctor of neurology from St. Louis University Health Sciences Center in St. Louis, Missouri. And he's Dr. William Burke. And I'd like to ask Dr. Burke, Doctor, welcome to Bob Enyart Live.
Yes, thank you.
You found out about this case. I know you're concerned about life issues and about innocent people being wrongly killed. Could you tell us first, how did you find out about Dylan Walborn?
Well, the first I heard about it, I'm a neurologist, and I get a newspaper called Neurology Today. And I get a lot of pro-life information. I get the National Right to Life News. I get Human Life Review. I get American Life League magazine.
Right.
I did not hear about it in any of those pro-life publications. I heard about it the February 7th, 2006 issue of the Neurology Today. And the neurologists, unfortunately, the Academy's position on these is extremely liberal. They back dehydrating people to death in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And their attitude toward this is that basically we've been doing it to adults, so, you know, what's new about doing it to children?
Yeah, and this is happening, of course, in Europe also, Northern Europe, the Netherlands,
right,
where they legalized euthanasia, and
right,
but it had to be adults and people who were aware, but then they gradually, just in a few years, while we've been talking about the slippery slope forever,
right,
the life side, now they've gone to where they will euthanize, and they are euthanizing children, including babies. A child is handicapped, and they will kill that child.
Quite correct. The real problem with this, and hearing it from neurologists there, they have their chief ethicist here, and I can give you a quote of what he said about it in this newspaper. The problem is they're a very powerful advocate for their positions. And this is something totally new. Starving to death a child, that it's unheard of. The criteria for withdrawing food and water in some of this, in our states, because we're a restrictive state, is they have to have clear and convincing evidence. But that's not the case in many states, including your state. You can basically dehydrate anybody to death that has a feeding tube and is considered in a terminal condition, which is defined as a permanent, irreversible state, but for the provision of food and water. So if somebody's got a feeding tube and then they have some chronic condition, they can, in theory, be dehydrated to death, and this is what happened to Dylan.
Well,
The other thing that people don't realize is what a horrible death this is. Somebody could not do this to them. I don't think any of your listeners could do this to themselves. I mean, it takes like 14 days to go without food and water. I mean, we get hungry or thirsty just in a few hours.
Mm.
But to think of going that long, it's just unbelievable that they would that this is allowed in our country.
Dr. Burke, we had people from our church. I pastored Denver Bible Church. We had people go down to Florida, Pinellas Park, Florida, where Terry Schiavo was being starved to death. And, of course, it was all hopeless in that we failed as a community of pro-lifers, even nationwide. We all failed. But the family, Terry Schiavo Schindler's family, had an affidavit from a nurse who said she could be fed by mouth. I've fed her by mouth.
Right.
She
right.
will swallow. Yeah. And so the right. family said to Judge George Greer, Republican, Baptist, conservative judge,
right.
hey, judge, you've said we can't feed her by a feeding tube. We're her family. We'd like to feed her by mouth.
Right.
And he refused to allow them to feed their daughter by mouth. So this is a passion on the death side of this battle for killing people.
Who, exactly correct.
That's what it is. It's a passion for killing people. And somehow it makes them feel better about their abortion position and their general worldview.
You know, the same thing happened to Nancy Crozan. Nancy Crozan, which is the case that started this, this is how this thing gets started. They pick on one case, and then it spreads out throughout the entire nation. And now all these states have these laws. Well, now you're starting out with Colorado here, killing a child. I mean, that, in my memory, and I keep track of this stuff, I can't think of a single other case where they allowed a child to be killed in this way. It's just awful. And this could keep spreading. You know, we have to push back on this. We have to
exactly.
get a hold of our legislators and make them change the laws.
Nancy Crozan, that was back in the 80s, right?
Yeah, well, late 80s, early 90s. Yeah, she started this, and now it went all downhill. Now, it isn't just vegetative state patients where they make the diagnosis. It's like demented people. In your state, it's anybody with a irreversible condition who requires a feeding tube. That could be anybody. It's going to be a totally wide awake person. They could take the feeding tube away and take the food and fluids out of their feeding tube. Usually they leave the feeding tube in. I mean, it isn't a matter of taking the feeding tube out. They leave it in because they want to give them medicine.
Now,
in Ellen's case, they wanted to give them seizure medicine. Hmm. But that tube was in there. They just don't want to pour the food and water down the tube.
Here,
that's what's happening.
At Bob and Yart Live, we've been on the air for 15 years, and here's how we present the morality of these situations. It's not wrong to die, of course. It's not wrong to allow someone who is irreversibly dying to die. Mm-hmm. It's okay if you're dying, if your body's racked with cancer, if you've been in a terrible accident and you are dying and even food and water can't keep you alive, you are irreversibly dying, then their heart stops. It's okay right. not to resuscitate. It's okay to die.
Right.
It's not okay to starve someone to death.
Right.
It's not okay to kill someone. An innocent person who's not dying should not be killed.
Right.
And we could talk about other related factors. But in the reality, none of those related factors are relevant. For example, there are many who support euthanasia who would rather give Dylan an injection and poison and kill him instantly. And then they'll argue, well, that's not painless. But that's not relevant because God said, do not murder.
Right.
And do not kill the innocent. If we want to quote other passages in the Bible, do not kill the innocent. And little Dylan Walborn was innocent, and killing him means we no longer have to deal with our own suffering for caring for him.
Right.
But we don't have the standing to kill him to try to solve somebody's problem.
Absolutely 100% correct. We're not in charge here on whether somebody lives or dies, you know, especially when it's just a matter of giving them food and water, which is ordinary care.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that, you know, I mean, it just totally, you're absolutely correct. It goes against everything in the Bible. Our church, our Pope John Paul spoke out against this and noted that giving food and water was not a treatment, was not a medical treatment. It was part of ordinary care. That's the position, the official position of the Catholic Church, and I'm sure Baptists and many other religions believe the same thing.
We have a state medical board here in Colorado. We have our law, and they explicitly, although they couch it in words where many people would read it and not even know what they're saying, they don't talk about food and water.
Right.
They talk about artificial nourishment right. and hydration.
Right. Right.
Well, who refers to water as hydration?
Right.
Just
right.
food and water. And so our law explicitly allows people to be starved to death. While our medical ethics board, they say Colorado's law, we don't support euthanasia. We don't support physician-assisted suicide. But you could starve people to death.
Right.
And they, by an irrational act of logic, they say that starving someone to death is not euthanasia.
You know, another thing that's kind of irritating is that there's all this concern now about killing the, you know, these people on death row, and they might be getting in some sort of a painful thing if they, the thing that knocks them out doesn't work, uncomfortable for a few minutes. I mean,
these guys
are mass murderers, and then here, and I don't think people realize this. Nobody in their right mind would choose to be a death by starvation, dehydration. You can't do it to yourself. It is so painful.
You
could not do this to yourself, so why would you do it to somebody else?
Yes, Dr. Burke, that's an excellent observation, that lethal injection, the same people who fight to kill Terry Schiavo by starvation and to kill Dylan Walborn by starvation are the same people who will say that lethal injection is too painful for a mass murderer.
Right.
When he's dead within seconds and these people suffer. And of course, and again, that's not the relevant issue of how much they suffer.
Right.
The relevant issue is that it's wrong to kill an innocent person.
Right.
So how about neurology today? Neurologists generally in America, you said you would give us a quote from the chief ethicist.
This is a quote from the, this is where I learned about Dylan Walborn and his situation. This is a quote from Dr. James Bernat. He's the one of the chief ethicists. He sets the ethical standards from what neurologists can or cannot do. This is what he says. Some might claim that the tragic circumstance of a 5-year-old child with severe congenital brain damage after a stroke is not identical to the severely demented elderly person. What is the same is that the prognosis for improvement for both is essentially zero, and others must determine whether continued artificial nutrition and hydration is in the patient's best interest. This is the legal basis for doing this, and I have never seen it used before. Mm. Best interest. There's a whole rank order of, if you don't have a living will, how do they determine what your medical treatment is going to be, including whether they're going to give you food and water? And if you don't have a living will, it's substituted judgment. In other words, if you're not competent, you don't have a living will, somebody else makes the judgment for you. It could be somebody that even doesn't even know you. And there's a rank order substituted judgment. And the very last thing in making a substituted judgment is best interest, what you would decide for yourself. Some of the other things are if you had an oral or written statement, if somebody comes up and says, oh, I knew this person, they would like to be starved to death, or if they know you're moral or religious, they could make a decision for you. But they couldn't do this with Dylan because he wasn't old enough to qualify for any of these things. So if somebody comes up and says, it's in your best interest to be dead, but I can tell you for absolute certain, nobody would choose to be dehydrated to death. Mm. It is just too uncomfortable. So this is the attitude of the ethicist who's trying to influence the thinking of neurologists as to what is allowed. Because a lot of these people don't think deeply ethically on this thing. They don't necessarily follow what the Bible says. They follow what their academy says. And so my impression of what they're trying to do here is to move neurologists thinking toward, oh, yeah, this is acceptable. We've been doing it all the time. Now let's just apply it to all these children. And the article in the Denver Post, there are 4,000 children in Denver, in Colorado alone, that could qualify for this. There are a million children in the United States.
And that's how they basically present it. There are 4,000 children in Colorado who can qualify for this quality of life kind of treatment, where do you realize how much money we could save?
Correct.
And how the parents could be freed up of this, you know, years-long responsibility. We could just kill these kids.
Right.
Dylan Walborn is the first. He showed us the way. Now let's start killing these kids.
What's happening just with Nancy Kurzan. I mean, it goes downhill unless you start pushing back. People have to get a hold of their senators. I've written my representative in Congress and my two senators about this. I've gotten in contact with the three major pro-life journals to write something about this. And Maria McFadden wrote back to me, and she said she was going to look for somebody to write in the Human Life Review. This needs to be national. People in the whole country need to know about what's going on here. Mm-hmm. And hopefully they'll get on it. But if your listeners could write their senators, write their state senators, state representatives, anybody to put a halt to this. Your laws are terrible. Ours are bad enough, but the law in Colorado is awful.
Well,
the other group of people to write to are Maria McFadden at Human Life Review and Dave Andrusko at the National Right to Life and Judy Brown at American Life League. Write to them. Say, you need to put this in the press. Get this in a national eye as to what the heck is going on here. Mm.
And it's all these people are in agreement.
Right.
And you know why I think that they haven't all jumped on this? Now, we jumped on this when we found out about it
right.
and did many shows on the topic and
right.
had meetings with the church that the
right.
Denver Post wrongly right. said that this
right.
pastor Buddy Kahn was supportive of killing this little boy. And it uh-huh. turns out Pastor Buddy Kahn completely opposes the killing of any person
right.
by euthanasia, by starvation, or
right.
killing an innocent person. And so the Denver Post misrepresented Victory Church. But so we jumped on it, but most have not. And I think the reason they have not is because everyone is exhausted.
Right.
Terry Schiavo, the nation fought, the pro-lifers fought, and I hate, you know, some people don't want to hear this, but almost every step of the way, it was Republican judges who voted
right.
to kill Terry Schiavo.
Right, right.
And George W. Bush, he had his judge on the 11th Circuit in Florida, and so did Ronald Reagan, and so did George H.W. Bush. Mm-hmm. Those three Republican pro-life presidents had six justices on the 11th Circuit, and all six voted to kill Terry Schiavo.
Right,
all
right.
six of the Reagan, Bush, and George W. Bush judges.
I think you're right, Reverend Einhart. But I think this is something new. This will shock people that they would do this to a child. I think this is a little bit different than doing it to an adult, because we've
yeah.
sort of got used to doing it to the Nancy Cruzans, the
right.
Busalakis, and it's going on in our nursing homes, in our hospitals. I was in a case. We met with the Archbishop here in St. Louis, and he stopped it from happening in a Catholic hospital, where they just took the man home and did it at home. But this is different, though. Doing it to a child, I think, is going to get a little bit more sympathy than doing it to an adult.
Dr. Burke,
changing the whole standard is going to make a difference.
Well, we do need to use Dylan. Love and compassion for children who are going to be starved to death at the advice of Children's Hospital. Dylan Walborn, we need to remember him in memorial
right.
For his sake and for ours as a nation to fight against those who will starve children to death. For 15 years on this show, we've taken calls, and quite often when we have a guest like we have you on the air right now, Dr. Burke, we don't take calls, but my call screener just told me that a woman called very upset, and she said, we've never been in a condition like Terry's. Dr. Burke and Bob Enyart, they've never been in Terry's condition or Dylan's condition, and they have no right to be saying what we're saying, that you shouldn't kill a handicapped child. So I've never been a Jew, but I think I know it's wrong to kill Jews, and I'm not a handicapped child. But I know it's wrong to kill handicapped
children.
Well,
I'll tell you one thing. I'm an alive human being just as Dylan was, and I know what it feels like to be starved, to be hungry, to be thirsty. You know, every single person, every day, is going to get a little bit thirsty, a little bit hungry every day. Think about it, going 24 days like that.
Right.
Are you going to torture somebody to death because you don't want them here?
Well, and that's a good point. But you know what, Dr. Burke, I really think we have to play that down. Because we are in a battle that's going to go on for as long as the Lord tarries.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there's a battle between right and wrong. And the enemy is pretty sharp. And they take the things we say and they manipulate around it. And eventually they're going to painlessly euthanize people.
They're just absolutely.
They're just going to give lethal injections, and they're going to say, look, here's this four-year-old child, and he's not going to suffer at all. In fact, we're going to be the ones to end his suffering. We're going to kill him right now in 1 minute.
Right. You're absolutely correct. There's a moral law, and we should be following it. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't follow it.
Right.
Now, but we need to speak out. You're absolutely correct. There's a moral law. We shouldn't kill people. That's it.
So
that's what we should be following.
That needs to be our primary strategy.
Right.
And then beyond that, we have these other issues around the periphery that we could work through. With Terry Schiavo, the public thinks that Terry was being kept alive by machines, which is flat out not true.
Right.
And they also think that she was dying, which is not true.
Correct.
She was handicapped.
Right.
Now, how about this persistent vegetative state? I know that you're an expert. You know a lot about that whole issue.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I wrote about this when they first came out with this definition, because it's not an actual condition. It's a hypothetical condition. And I wrote about this, that they could not, the basis of it is that there's no behavioral evidence of awareness, but lack of behavioral evidence of awareness. And this doesn't apply to Dylan. He was not in the vegetative state.
No.
Just from what I read.
But no, right.
For other people.
He had his favorite stories. His mother would read him.
He was responsive.
Right.
And he went to school. He did some coloring. There's no way he was in the vegetative state. But other people have been diagnosed in this condition, but it's only a hypothetical condition. And I wrote about this in 1990 in neurology, and I got a response back from Ronald Cranford, who was the head of the Academy's Ethics Committee at this time. And this is basically what he said. I'll just give you a little quote here.
Yeah.
Given the complexity of how exactly physicians determine consciousness or complete lack thereof, the medical philosophical difficulty in proving beyond any doubt that something, consciousness, doesn't exist, his implication is an important reminder to the medical profession that we must be sure of our facts and continue to gather data and experience to prove or disprove our evolving hypothesis. It's just a hypothesis. They don't know that these people are unconscious.
Well,
what it all boils down to, they don't know that they're experiencing pain while they're being dehydrated to death.
How about people in long-term comas who have come back? They've recovered.
Absolutely. Nobody stays in coma. You either, within a month, you're either dead, really dead.
Or you're not
dying.
Or
you wake up. And there's this condition that they made up, basically, that says you're alert. And this is with the definition of a vegetative state. You're alert. That means that you have your eyes open.
Right.
But there's no content in your consciousness. Well, they don't know that.
They don't
know whether you're thinking or not. And right. I've examined four people that they said, for the court system, that they said were in the vegetative state. They were not in the vegetative state.
Let me process that. Let me think through that. They say that, well, someone is alert, their eyes are open, but there's no content in their thoughts, their consciousness.
Yeah, they're not thinking about anything. They're just awake. It's hard to imagine how this could happen.
Have there been people who have recovered and then give testimony of awareness while they were in a coma or whatever?
Oh, sure. There are, if you talk to some nurses, they'll tell you all the time. I have a friend that's a nurse, and the doctor used to come in, and the guy wouldn't respond, and the guy was totally alert. He knew everything that was going on, and the doctor said, well, he's in the vegetative state, and, you know, let him go, and then the guy totally came to, and he told about it, yeah.
I wonder if there have been any studies done collecting these stories and documenting them.
Well, there are some new, actually, techniques. They wouldn't allow it in the Schiavo case. There's some new brain scanning techniques that they can actually pick up responsiveness in the brain, and they have a new condition they call minimally conscious state, where they have to admit that the patient is in fact conscious.
Mm-hmm.
And people have tried to get the judges to do the scan on Schiavo, and the judge wouldn't let them do it. So.
But in reality, none of these details, the truth, the facts, don't really matter. to the people who want to kill the innocent. Like this lady who called in, she probably knows very little about Dylan's case. Probably first time in her life she heard that they took a four-year-old handicapped boy and starved him to death. And her gut reaction is that was a good thing to do.
You know what? One of the problems is people work on their emotions. And that article in the Post was so emotionally laden, and they developed sympathy for the family and this, that, and the other thing. But really, we need to follow reason, and we need to follow God's law, which is totally clear. Thou shalt not kill. I mean, it's unambiguous here.
I tried to make a list out of the Denver Post article of the reasons they gave for killing Dylan. Mm-hmm. And you're not kidding about it being emotionally laden.
Right.
And on our website, dylanwalborn.com, that's W-A-L-B-O-R-N, dylanwalborn.com, I list. And he had a lolling head. He had open but vacant blue eyes. Mm-hmm. He had severe CP, cerebral palsy. They said he was virtually blind, but obviously he's not blind. They wouldn't have said virtually. He couldn't perform any voluntary function. That's what by the time he cried silent tears, and these are the reasons, and he'd have seizures, and so therefore he should be put to death.
You know, the fact that he was crying silent tears means that he's aware. I mean, people don't cry when they're not aware of what's happening.
Mm.
So, and they complained that he could feel pain, and they were giving him pain medicines. Well, a vegetative patient can't feel pain. He was not in the vegetative state. So,
Dr. William Burke, we're out of time, but I want to thank you so much for joining me.
Okay. Well, I encourage your listeners to write their senators, their representatives, to make this well known throughout the country as to what happened to Dylan.
All right. Hey, thank you so very much.
Okay.
Dr. Burke, I really appreciate that. And on line two, ma'am, you're the lady who called in?
Yes.
And why are you upset?
Because I believe that Jesus' words are not being applied. He says, apply the golden rule to most everything. Do unto others as you would have done unto you. Would you have 15 years of a feeding tube in your stomach? Being a woman, of course, it's 1,000 times worse.
If you are going to use the golden rule to justify killing a handicapped child,
no, I'm talking about Terry Schiavo.
All right. Yeah, even Terry Schiavo.
15 years with a feeding tube.
Yeah, when people are suffering, you don't kill them. If you think killing the innocent is compassion, you have confused compassion with hatred.
Well, if you like to be Mengele tortured for 15 years without eating or drinking, because that's what her life was.
I understand you think that doing right is to kill the innocent.
No.
And I hope you ask. All right, for those in Iowa, hang on. We're not going to go off the air. Let's just finish talking to this gal, and then we'll come back after the break.
Doing right is not being
Mengele. We're out of time. And if, ma'am, if you'd like to stay on, we'll talk to you in the second half of the show. We'll be back right after this.
For the library of any Christian interested in studying the truth of the Bible, you'll find essential material like the plot manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible that will clear up doctrinal issues. Then there's The Tree, a fun audio journey back to the Garden of Eden, where you'll learn about this most famous tree and its impact on humanity. Check out the Mount Moriah video. This video gives evidence for the resurrection, combining biblical and secular resources. It's a great witnessing tool. And don't forget the death penalty video. Learn that Jesus advocated the death penalty and learn how God put the death penalty at the heart of the gospel. You can directly help Bob's outreach by subscribing to Best of Bob, Bob's Best 8 Shows of the Month, or build a Bible study library by ordering the monthly Bible albums. There's a lot more, so give us a call at 1-800-8-NYARD. That's 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278 or KGOV.com.
This is Bob Inyart inviting you to read our manuscript, The Plot, for an overview of the whole Bible. Call us at 800-836-9278. That's 836-9278. We're back, Bob Inyart Live. Earlier today, I had in studio two Columbine dads, Brian Rohrbaugh and Randy Brown. Randy Brown, his family, his son Brooks Brown. Even if you live outside of Colorado, you might remember the name Brooks Brown. Brooks was a friend of Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold, and he realizing that they were basically criminals at heart, turned them into the police for making pipe bombs, threats, and even death threats. And so we had Brooks Brown's dad, Randy Brown, in studio with Brian Orbaugh, and we talked about the extraordinary circumstances unnecessarily that led to Columbine, how easily that could have been prevented. It should have been prevented, and it wasn't. And then the system, the school system, the sheriff's department basically lied in the aftermath to protect their image. And so we will be going to Greece May 18th. Bob and Yurt Live's annual biannual tour of a Bible country. This is our 2006 Bible tour of Greece. There's 26 of us going. We're going to have the greatest time. But while we're gone, we're going to air the interview we did this morning as part of the shows that you'll get to listen to in late May. So make sure you tune in for that. And if you miss a program at Bob and Yurt Live, check out the website, because we archive our programs indefinitely. We have many years of programs, and they're titled. Many of the shows have summaries. You can see what the show's about. You can search for a topic you're interested in. That's at KGOV.com. Well, Dr. William Burke, had a fascinating conversation with him, and now I'd like to continue it, especially for those newer to this program. And if you don't really know the whole Dylan Wolborn story, I want to tell it to you, because Dylan was living in Broomfield, Colorado, which is just to the north of Arvada, Colorado, which is where my family lives, Bob and Cheryl Enyart with our seven boys and two daughter-in-laws and two grandkids. Well, they don't all live here at our house, although it seems like they do quite often. But just to the north of us, little Dylan Wolborn was living with cerebral palsy. And, of course, that's difficult for anyone. And he had an especially severe form of CP. But Dylan was a victim of America's mercy-killing euthanasia movement. Like the woman who called in from Colorado, and the show in Colorado is only a half hour, and so we were going off the air and we lost her. We tried to get her back, but we'd love to talk to her, of course. She is part of the euthanasia movement in America. She's perhaps never thought about that before. Perhaps she's never thought about it, but she's part of the euthanasia movement, and she supports mercy killing. And, of course, that's how it happened in Europe. In the 1890s, there was a popular book on quality of life that was endorsed by the medical community throughout Germany. And it wasn't Hitler that came up with the idea of killing people who are better off dead. It was the doctors. And in fact, in Germany, they euthanized people by the tens of thousands before they killed a single Jew in a concentration camp. They emptied out their hospitals and their homes for children with disabilities. They emptied them out. Remember the founder of Planned Parenthood, who wrote in one of her two books, Margaret Sanger wrote about the blind, the deaf, the dumb, the mute, and the lame, and she called them the dead weight of human waste. So that's the kind of thinking. Now, the euthanasia movement is a little smarter today. They're more Madison Avenue PR marketing aware, so they don't say things like that openly. But they talk about what they're doing in terms of mercy and love and kindness. So mercy killing, just like the Germans, they thought Jews weren't good enough to be euthanized. It was only for Aryans, for Germans. And they killed about 100,000 people out of compassion and love. And that got them in the mood to kill the Jews. Why not? When you're killing your own grandkids, then you have people you don't like because you're a racist. Might as well kill them too. Kill your neighbor, kill your enemy. Doesn't matter that they've not been convicted of a capital crime, just kill them. So little Dylan Wolborn was a victim of America's mercy-killing euthanasia movement, and Denver's Children's Hospital, of all groups imaginable, Denver's Children's Hospital judged little Dylan better off dead. And it wasn't one person at Children's Hospital. It was a committee of doctors, medical ethics experts. And they said to the parents, you know, this is a good time. Just stop feeding them. So they starved Dylan to death. There was someone from Porter Hospital was involved, a Denver social worker. Dylan's public school teachers came to his going away party. How's that? His parents held basically a going away party for Dylan, telling some friends and these social workers and all that, and the reporter for the Denver Post, that they're going to now kill Dylan. So they had a party at his home. And family members flew in from around the country, and Dylan's public school teachers were there, and the Denver Post was there to document the whole ordeal. And then 4-year-old Dylan was starved to death over a period of 24 days. Just murder. It's murder. And when you're going to kill the innocent because you think they're better off dead, then you've crossed the line of do not kill the innocent. That's a pretty significant line, and many people just don't care about killing the innocent. And it's not that they're not smart enough to know where that leads, is that they're not good enough to care. They don't care where it leads, and if you show them the evidence, they don't care anyway. So it's a hard issue, and you have to decide out there, you listening to this program right now, where is your heart at? Do you have a soft heart before the Lord? Or do you have a hard heart and you say, you know, I don't even care what God thinks about this. We're going to do it anyway. We hear at Bob and Yurt Live, we hear from people who they're counseling or they have some crisis in their family. And they say, for example, twice in the last week, I've heard this. Bob, my mother or my friend, Christian, says, well, even if God says it's wrong, it's still right. We still need to do it. And that's from people who are believed to be Christians. So the Denver Post wrote an 8-page article documenting the killing of Dylan Walborn. And you could read that article and our website, dylanwalborn.com, online. And it's worth reading. Our website, Dylan, D-Y-L-A-N, W-A-L-B-O-R-N, dylanwalborn.com, links right at the top to the Denver Post article. And it's written by reporter Kevin Simpson, and he witnessed parts of the lengthy process, and he gives various justifications and reasons for starving Dylan. He had, for example, cerebral palsy. And he had a few seizures a day, and some would last for 40 minutes. He had more bad days than good days. And so for these reasons, they decided to kill him. Wow, he was handicapped, and he had seizures, sometimes as long as 40-minute seizures, and he had more bad days than good days. There's a good reason. Kill him. Let's go to the phones. And let's see, in Des Moines, Iowa, Jacob, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live.
Hey, Bob, thanks for taking my call. I'm sorry I didn't get to hear the first half hour of your program, but I just heard that woman call in.
Yes.
Talking about Terri Schiavo and how terrible it was. She was living on the tube and da-da-da. But, you know, the thing about that whole Terri Schiavo thing was the way that the media portrayed it. The fact that it wasn't a helpless girl on a feeding tube, she could have been rehabilitated. I mean, of course, she couldn't be back to 100%.
Right.
But there was rehab, there was work, there were doctors who said, we can get her back. And the media just refused to give any of that information over to the public. And so I have a lot of Christian friends that I know and people in our church and people around the town. I mean, when you talk about that issue, they say, well, I wouldn't want to live that way.
Yeah, and those Christian, well, Jacob, those Christian friends you have, they have a hard heart against God because out of their selfishness and apathy, They think that Jesus said we have to carry his cross. Things might get rough. They think Jesus said, if things get rough, just kill yourself.
Right, and I'm not sure if that whole Terri Schiavo situation would have gone down had the media actually given us the facts. And, of course, Michael Schiavo not letting any cameras in didn't help.
Yeah,
I mean, the only portraits or things that we saw were really, they showed her with tubes in her nose and all this, when in reality she wasn't in that condition. She was actually progressing and getting better.
Well, Michael Schiavo went to court and sued and got some couple million dollars or whatever that he was going to use for her rehabilitation.
Right.
And when he got the money, he ended all rehabilitation.
Yeah, he said, well, I got the money. Wait, yes. Actually, I forgot. She actually said I should pull the plug, so...
Yeah, that's...
It was really, really sad.
And he never said that, of course, when he was getting the money.
Of course,
in that lengthy process, just once he got the money. But, Jacob, even none of that is relevant, right, to the issue of killing Terri.
Correct.
Those things are not relevant. Even if she could not be rehabilitated, you don't kill someone who's not dying. I mean,
right.
If they're dying, you don't have to kill them.
Right. So, well, I mean, it's like if you break your leg, you chop it off. I mean, you don't. You put it in a cast, you go through rehabilitation, and you slowly bring it back to the level that it could have been. You don't get rid of it.
Well, yeah, that's true. And a human being is obviously of an eternal value and not to be discarded because they're handicapped. And when someone dies, it's okay to die. If you're irreversibly dying, it's okay to die, and we don't have to use machines to keep people alive who are dying. But here's where the media lies, and people want to believe the lie, including your Christian friends. From what I could tell, when you offer a correction, do they want to hear it?
Yes, they actually are pretty – I convinced them – I actually have convinced them otherwise.
All right. Well,
belief.
Good. I'm glad to hear that, and that's encouraging. But generally, people don't want to hear the truth. They'd rather go with the position that says you kill the innocent person.
Right.
And so if the media did explicitly tell the entire story and all the truth, most people would still want to kill her. It's not education. God doesn't say... The solution is education. The solution is our hard hearts against him and that people choose evil. God said, choose you this day, life or death, and most people will choose death.
Right.
So that's the problem. And yeah, we do battle the media because the media does lie and refuses to report the truth on so many of these issues. So we battle them and we want them to tell the truth. But the sad thing is, even with education, people still choose evil.
Right.
That's what we're up against.
Well, thanks, Bob, for taking my call.
Jacob, thank you for a great call.
You.
God bless you. I learned that lesson when I was a teenager, or was it younger? I remember being in a hospital in New Jersey, and I think this was when I was hospitalized for weeks on end. I had acute nephritis. I thought I had an ugly nephritis. I was young, but they told me it was acute nephritis, some kind of kidney disease, infection. And it was real serious. It was touch and go for a while. And a miracle happened. No, I'm only kidding. And so anyway, I ended up in the hospital for weeks and missed a few months of school. Had a tutor who was a Christian who prayed for me for years, and that was great. But anyway, when I was in the hospital, and I believe it was that time, I remember, you know, you get to know the doctors, the nurses, you see the doctor's lounge, and they'd open the door and smoke would pour out. And I think, boy, haven't they heard smoking is bad for your health? And ever since, as a young kid, then growing up, teenager and adult, I'd ask nurses, the last time I asked a nurse this question was last week. And I asked, do doctors and nurses smoke ever? And she laughed and she said, are you kidding me? They're in there taking care of people who are dying of lung cancer and they go out and they smoke a cigarette. So as a young person, I learned by observation that education is not the answer. education is important. It's important to teach people the truth and right from wrong. But it's not as though if you educate people, then they will do right. The only person who thinks that is a humanist who thinks people are basically good. When you educate people, they often do worse. They do even worse. So the prophets came on the scene, and the people hated God all the more. The same thing with Jesus Christ. The Lord spent 3 years publicly going to Israel, and the whole nation repented. Right? Because how clear his teaching was and how powerful his miracles were, and so they all repented. And he's still alive today there in Israel at the school for the prophets. No, that's not the story. The more clearly he presented truth, the more they hated him. And the clearer the division between right and wrong, the more they chose wrong. And they murdered Jesus Christ because he was speaking the truth. The truth is unavoidably offensive. And the Lord said, if they hated me, they will hate you. So it's not that a Christian wants to be hated, but it's an occupational hazard. And Christianity today teaches that everyone should like you, and you should never offend, and don't judge, and forgive everyone. And if you do that, everyone will like you. I mean, where's that come from? That doesn't come from the Word of God. Jesus said, I didn't come to bring peace, but a sword to divide parents from children, even. And it's not that a Christian wants division, but it's worth telling the truth if the cost is that someone will be offended. But we should do that with wisdom, right? We need to do that with wisdom and not just for the sake of offending people. And you could offend people in the flesh, and then you're sinning. So if you offend people, it should be because you're honoring the Lord in some way, sharing the truth with them. All right, so the Denver Post article gave these reasons why Dylan Wellborn should be killed, that he had CP, cerebral palsy. He had a few seizures a day, some as long as 40 minutes. And here is a big one. He had more bad days than good days. So that was in the article. Hey, look, they had to kill Dylan because he had more bad days than good days. I mean, there are probably some of you in the audience who have more bad days than good days, depending on where you're at in your life. Morally, it's justifiable to allow an irreversibly dying person to die. It's okay to let a dying person die. It is wrong to starve to death someone who's not dying. If they're dying, you don't have to starve them to death. Just let them die if they're dying. But Dylan wasn't dying. Terry Schiavo wasn't dying. You know, God made us different than the animals. God made man in his image and in his likeness. Now, God didn't make animals in that way. And in addition to prohibiting murder by the law written in our hearts, our conscience, as Paul writes in Romans chapter 2, Paul says that God wrote the law on our hearts in our conscience. Romans 2:15. Well, in addition to our conscience, God explicitly commanded in Scripture, Exodus 23:7, do not kill the innocent. Find that also in Psalm 94:21. Do not kill the innocent. That is, those who are not convicted of a capital crime. If somebody's been convicted of the capital crime, then Exodus 23:7 doesn't apply. The government then has the authority to kill them because they're not innocent. So God says to us, do not kill the innocent. That is, don't kill someone who's not convicted of a capital crime. So the Denver Post article never identified the specific criteria which convinced them that this family could justifiably starve to death Dylan, deny him food and water, and starve him to death. They never said, okay, this is the reason right here why it's okay. They write the article, and the whole article is about God and faith and religion. A test of faith, a test of religion. The whole argument is presented that way, and they misrepresent a local pastor, Buddy Kahn, who ministers at a charismatic Victory Church, a big church just north of Denver. And they write the whole article as though Pastor Buddy Khan is in on agreeing to kill Dylan. And so Victory Church, this article comes and goes, and they don't say anything publicly. And we're beside ourselves because here's a Christian, pro-life, fundamentalist church. And what? Their pastor, their associate pastor, supports euthanizing this handicapped child. So we set up a meeting with the church, and it turns out with the senior pastor and Pastor Buddy Khan, and it turns out they are totally against euthanasia, 100%. They're against abortion. They believe that it is murder to starve to death someone. And Pastor Buddy would never, ever support the killing of Dylan Wolborn. So this 8-page article in the Denver Post, it's all about the struggle of faith and coming to terms with that it's right by God to kill your child. And the spiritual authority through the article is Pastor Buddy Khan. And so it was somewhat startling to us that Pastor Buddy says, I didn't know anything about it. I'm totally against it. I mean, that was startling to us. And it turns out that Pastor Buddy was called to pray with the family. And when Dylan died, he was called, but no one told him that they were going to starve their son to death. But the way the article was written, with Pastor Buddy appearing at key decision points in the process, they made it sound like he affirmed their decision to kill their child. And he says, absolutely not. He would never do that, and it's wrong to do that. So that's pretty cool. And then Victory Church wrote a letter to the Denver Post from Pastor Buddy saying the article misrepresented me. I would never support a family doing that. And you know what the Denver Post did with the article? Nothing. They blew it off. They didn't print it. How could you not print a letter to the editor like that? How could you not print that? But the Denver Post didn't print it. Hey, is that the same Denver Post where their vice president of advertising was arrested in Miami for trying to pick up a young boy to have sex with over the internet? Is that same Denver Post? Oh, yeah, their vice president of advertising arrested in Miami in a sting operation trying to have sex with a young boy. I remember that Denver Post. Well, anyway, that's the Denver Post. Hey, we're out of time. Check out our website, KGOV.com.